This episode is part three of our video marketing trend series. And in this episode, we're breaking down the convergence of branding and direct response. Hit it. Drop that music.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery.
Hey-o! If you've been watching what Bud Light has been doing over the past couple of years, it is clear that branding is becoming far more direct response. And I think that's an exciting trend, but we're also seeing the inversion with an increased need and expectation for branding style content on digital platforms that were once dominated by direct response. What the heck is going on, and how should business leaders respond to take advantage of this rapidly developing trend? To help answer these questions, I'm joined right now by the big nerd himself, Marcus Krieg. What is up?
What is up?
I know. That was my question to you.
Yes.
Well, dude, I love what Bud Light is doing. And it's super cool for me. Like, let's start off talking about branding versus direct response and TV ads becoming more strategic. It is about time. And one of the cool things we're seeing is the line between digital and traditional TV advertising is really blurry at this point. You know, we're seeing a shift in how TV advertisers create content using direct response techniques. And years ago, like we saw this with the Geico commercials and other brands being, they started to begin adopting digital concepts.
Like hump day.
What day is it?
What day is it? It's hump day.
My dog flips out over that commercial. Even when they play like the retro one, he's now 7, so he flips out again. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, this menacing friend is back, right?
But like that was like a viral technique, right?
Right.
They chose a weekly trigger that could inspire people sharing that ad,
right,
to make a joke on some every week.
Works
every
beautifully.
Week it gets views because they adopted a viral trigger in a traditional branding video in order to make it go further online. But that is obviously, I know you're just saying that's just the beginning of what we're seeing now. That was they were doing that years ago.
But I actually, you know, I go to so many of these events, and I know you do too, and I'm actually seeing the fruit of a lot of the seeds planted over the last 10 years where television people sat in after lecture of becoming more digital savvy and how you have to use certain techniques online that don't exist. And now you're starting to see them like reaping the benefits of those seeds and starting to put them into action. But we're also seeing the opposite. Let's first talk about Bud Light. Mm-hmm. Like Bud Light is super cool. If anybody's been watching what Bud Light is doing with their ingredients campaign, like to
me, they've come a long way.
They've come a long way. Let's break it down. Let's talk corn syrup. Let's do all of that good stuff. And let's show people why this trend is important in the video marketing space.
Cool. Yeah. So I think if you think about where Bud Light has come from, it was like, you know, they had the funny, clever stuff, you know, traditional branding style videos where they're just trying to create relational equity, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to make you smile, right? Like the Budweiser commercials, right? Like just pick any old Budweiser commercial. They were funny.
What about the Wasabi commercials? You remember those?
Right.
Those were the same. Wasabi. Wasabi.
Wasabi. Like
yeah. Wasabi.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, it's funny, you know, like they were trying to make a deposit in your brain of relational equity, right? So that you would have good vibes about the brand. That was their traditional way of getting people to think of you first when they were going to engage in a sales process, right? And they had few options back in the day. You worked through an agent if you were Geico, right? Like it was always an agent in the insurance space. Right. So you didn't need to create a direct response online conversion.
My agent is the Gecko, just so you know, in case you have the same one.
Mm-hmm. He's my favorite.
Yeah.
His accent is adorable.
Adorable.
Speaking of viral triggers and how they changed his accent and then suddenly he started going viral. Fun fact, there's a reason why all of the Harmon Brothers videos have people with accents in them, basically. Not all of them, but it's a common feature. And it's because Americans love accents. We find accents funny. Go figure.
Dude, don't tell me. My college girlfriend had an accent and it worked.
It does. It definitely does. My wife has an adorable little, she has a little Britishisms because she grew up in Saudi for a little while.
Yes.
And now that she's discovered the podcast a couple of weeks ago, she's probably going to hear about this. But
you might have, when you're done, let's tell the other story.
So it's like, my favorite is button. Both T's. I love that.
It's great.
So
but,
cute.
But your wife heard the episode where we were talking about, it's really the Netflix economy episode, where we're talking about the Burton Bindings, that she was going down the rabbit hole. And did you get in trouble for that?
She found me out immediately. I was actually going home. I'm like, hey, love, you know, the podcast dropped today. You'd love this. And then she's like, oh, yeah. So I apparently I liked a rabbit hole, huh?
That's so funny.
That's pretty funny. All right. All right. So back to Bud Light. Okay. So Budweiser, they've obviously come a long way from just creating relational brand equity, traditional branding style videos, right? And now, if you think about what's happened over the last couple of years, the progression that they've gone through is actually very similar to the progression we've been advising in sort of a basic story framework. You need to give people a reason to select you from within a category, right? And you have to position yourself. And okay, let's just run through some of like the high level like campaigns that they've been running just inside this Bud Light Night campaign.
Because there's a bunch.
The medieval, just the medieval campaign. If we just punch in on that, look at the progression they've gone over for the last few years. It was for the many, not the few.
Right.
Right. And what are they? They were making fun of the
mead guy.
The mead guy. The guy who would bring a microbrew to a party. Who does that?
Right.
People don't drink the same thing you drink. Why would you bring a like a bitter hoppy IPA to a party that everyone's going to be drinking?
Right.
Like half of the people here are going to hate it, and half the other people are going to think you're so trendy, dude.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's what they're making fun of. They're making fun of that dynamic.
Right.
I'm totally the guy who would bring the microbrews. So
and not only
calling
that,
me out.
But when we had a recent Wirebuzz party, I stocked the fridge full of like, you know, cool things that I think hipsters would like, you know, a bunch of micro beer.
And now there's no food, room for food. There's no,
but those are the beers that are left.
Yeah.
And the easy drinking ones are gone.
Right. Absolutely. So it's funny. Okay, so this they had that for the many, not the few, which is just category positioning, right? They're saying that of all of the options that you could bring to a large gathering, you want to bring a simple brew.
Right.
A simple beer that everyone can like. A commercial beer. Bring a commercial beer that everyone can get behind.
Dilly dilly.
Right, exactly. But that doesn't tell you why Bud Light's special. Bud Light is just one of a few really, really competitive options within that category. That's like
but
McDonald's
they had to pre-frame
saying,
that.
Exactly. They're starting the story where you're at, right? This is like McDonald's trying to convince the market that they need hamburgers first.
Right.
Right? And saying that you should need you should actually let's go reality. Taco Bell, think outside the bun.
Right.
Positioning directly against the competition in their space.
Beautiful.
Category comparison, that positioning could benefit Filiberto's.
Filiberto's!
Or whatever your local market equivalent
that
is.
That one happens to be mine. It is a dive Mexican restaurant in the Phoenix area, but there are also Roberto's! And
back home, it was Rigoberto's.
Rigoberto's, a bunch of these in the Phoenix area.
It's very similar in that they're just trying to get you to choose from within a category, because if you choose that category, they win more.
Right.
Right? They don't want you to be trendy going to a party. They want you bringing the commercial beer. And if they can get the category to grow, they know that they will carve out a piece of that pie.
But they had to set up the few to many
mm-hmm.
before they could start to bring you into the category.
They're dealing with a cultural dynamic,
right?
They needed to establish a different positioning for a different type of person in a certain context. If you're going to a gathering, you're going to bring a commercial beer.
Which
otherwise
commercial
you're
beer?
Weird.
There's options
exactly.
There.
And now, what happened during the Super Bowl? What happened during the Super Bowl this year?
They took us to the next stage of this story and got into the category and really distanced themselves from competitors by exploiting the poor ingredient quality or unhealthy ingredient quality.
Right.
Of and, their competitors.
Right. Now within the small or commercial light beer category, okay, their main competitors, Miller Lite, Coors Light, right? And both of their competitors have corn syrup and they don't. And so they chose a market position, something that people care about, that people are getting behind, that their big demographic, in particular young men,
right,
are going to be thinking about as they're thinking, well, how can I be healthy? How can I be jacked and tan, right?
Right.
Because that's what we all think about when we're in our 20s and 30s.
And 40s.
If you couldn't tell from the
right.
videos of me you've seen recently,
right.
how jacked and tan I am.
Right.
as I
push you are, my... You are the tannest Oregon native I have ever met.
It's true. It's true because I moved to Arizona.
right? And all that man tan you yeah. put on each
oh,
day.
Oh, totally. I'm so orange. You don't even know. So, okay, now the progression continued after the Super Bowl, but I think that they've been the fact that they've been using the Super Bowl to launch these big moments, right? The key milestones in progression. We talk about the our momentum messaging framework.
Right.
And how, you know, you start with their priority, you establish category positioning, right? You're already going to drink. You don't need to convince people to drink, right? You need to convince them to choose your type of beer first. Then they launch that at Super Bowls. They start this whole campaign at the Super Bowl, and then a year later, they update the campaign and move you to the next milestone
right.
in the messaging journey, which is now within that category, you're going to choose us because we don't have corn syrup. Now we've given you a reason to choose us from amongst the right. cheap beers.
Miller Lite has corn syrup. Coors Light has corn syrup. But Bud Light doesn't. It's a healthier beer option.
Right. And they can't say that.
Right.
But they're implying it.
Right.
Which is just as powerful. Now, what the progression from there, okay, now that since the Super Bowl, the new campaign has been just four simple ingredients.
Right.
Right? That's been what they've been pushing. So they already got into everyone's brain. We don't have corn syrup and they do. But now they're saying they're taking it one step further into resistance elimination territory. And they're saying, hey, look, we're a really simple beer. Four simple ingredients.
Right.
Right? And so they've taken us all the way over the course of 1.5 years, not even 1.5 years now. They've taken us through the journey from the place where people are already starting, which in their case is a little bit further through the roadmap because people already want to drink. You don't need to convince people to drink.
Right.
So a little bit easier.
Like you're talking me into it right now.
Right. It's like a smaller funnel, but still a funnel. And they took us through it with a great story progression that is actually moving the market. It's magnificent. And another fun fact, they ran these long videos during the Super Bowl when long videos are the most expensive.
Well, we were already drinking.
Right. We've already made our purchase decisions right? for the day. But they knew that making a 60-second video where they truly razzed both of their main competitors oh, yeah. within the market segment. By truly razzing both of their competitors, they could change the market. And they paid an astronomical amount for a 60-second segment. And then they did other segments as well. But that was the big segment that they paid a lot for.
I love these commercials. I know you do too. Let's put them on the show notes page for this episode. We'll make sure that they're up there. I've actually got them right there, Marcus. You could see the links inside of our episode cheat sheet that we have prepped ourselves on. It's a great topic. My favorite, there's two videos. One is when they introduce the labeling, the ingredients labeling. Mm-hmm. And they're going to put it on, but they have that Bud Light Knight, and he's on top of the castle because there are these people in the castle that are firing with bow and arrows the ingredients to the common people, right? And people are getting taken out. There's like arrows going into their arm, and the Bud Light stops them and says, don't you think there's a better way to do this instead of randomly firing it on people? Maybe we should just put our ingredients on the label. And they were like, wow, right? That was the tiny step they moved. Then the next one was about the corn syrup one. You've got to see both of them. And what I love about the corn syrup one is I had never thought about the corn syrup topic, right? And then the way that they introduce the Miller Lite and the Coors Lite brewers is they continue on with the concept of this castle and kingdoms and knights, and they get a random shipment of corn syrup to the Bud Light castle.
A giant barrel. Like
yes.
A giant barrel that you would need to pull with mules or horses or something.
Absolutely. And so then the first one they think of has got to be Miller Lite. Oh, that should have been delivered to Miller Lite. So then they take you on one of these epic journeys with conflict.
And they're like doing Miller Lite a favor. Like it's like they're going on this journey to do Miller Lite a solid. So they're even positioning themselves as being like the good guys,
the good neighbors,
right? Then they get to Miller Lite, right? This castle, and you'll I want you to see the commercial, but we're gonna give you some of the deep things that they did here, right? Let's
Which
unpack
are
it a little bit. So when they get to Miller Lite, the Miller Lite people are kind of right? They're kind of like. They're trying to kind of position as, well, people who drink Miller Lite, they're not very smart. They're kind of like they're from the country. They're country folk.
Right.
Kind of dull. Right. Like that's what they're trying
to say.
They do
stereotype.
They are stereotyping, but they're doing it very subtly. Yes. So that's why I'm unpacking it, because they weren't trying to create a media storm. Right. But really watch it and watch the subtleties of the characters that they're presenting, of the people who represent Miller Lite. Okay. And then Miller Lite, like the people at the Miller Castle, reveal that they have already received their shipment.
We got it yesterday.
We received it yesterday.
Yes.
Have you tried Coors Light? They also use corn syrup.
Right. Which in my brain, instantly, I was like, oh no, now they're going to have to go across the Rockies in order to do that.
And
right.
So then there's another epic journey, and it's like past volcanoes and through the snow. Yeah. And then they get there. And now the Coors Light people, just like you would think, they're kind of bros.
Yeah.
Like, you almost think like snowboarder bros. Like that's the type that they're trying to sort of capture with them. Is, yeah, dude, brah. Like that guy.
Brah.
So they're really also trying to say, we're not these people either, right? They're also trying to remove themselves from like subcultures that the mass market might find to be characteristic of a commercial beer.
Right.
And so then they're saying, we're the best, most mass market commercial beer, because we're not just for those people or just for those people. Mm-hmm. We're for everyone else. And by the way, if you're health conscious, you probably want to be making a smart decision. Right. And so they always sort of have that, like, they're the good guys. They're witty. They're smart. They're having a good time.
Right.
And they're positioning other people in a different way.
If I have to be
it's deep.
If I have to be a peasant now that I've seen this ad, in anybody's kingdom, it better be in the Bud Light kingdom.
As long as the dragon doesn't come back.
Right, because that would suck.
That would suck.
All right, so let's unpack this. We've now laid out the foundation of what Bud Light was doing, why it was brilliant, but why were they doing it? Why is it brilliant? And Marcus, let's talk about TV ads and how they're becoming more strategic. And then we're going to do the inverse of this.
Cool. So, you know, we've obviously seen this transition over time as digital has become more mainstream. You know, people see something on TV and then they go use digital to create a sharing environment. So there's that element of establishing triggers like we talked about with Geico. And then, of course, the situation and progression to actually using direct response storytelling principles.
Beautiful.
And not just being funny. In terms of being able to move the market with real positioning and being able to be comfortable using longer format in order to make those cases. These are things that you would typically have seen in a direct response context. Direct response advertisers would be the ones who have been telling you that a 3 to 5 minute on Facebook is optimal, that a 15-minute video on YouTube is optimal. They would have told you that. You know, a week ago, you could have gotten that information. This is not groundbreaking to them. But to the traditional brands and to the mainstream marketers, this seems very groundbreaking that longer things can be better. But now we're starting to see, even on TV, even on the Super Bowl when it's crazy expensive, we're seeing that TV brands, like the traditional advertisers, are starting to adopt some of these direct response and direct marketing principles in order to move the market in a very strategic way.
Yep.
But then I know you just sort of teed up, and then on the inverse, we're seeing traditional digital brands, right? So some of our digital darlings like Dollar Shave Club.
Right.
Now they're having TV ads.
Right.
They're seeding content on TV now. So instead of running a large ad campaign on YouTube, like they did to launch their original Dollar Shave Club commercial, and trying to use that in a very direct response way, mm-hmm. they now ran that updated ad as a TV commercial in order to get it in front of a lot of people, knowing that those people will also then go digital and share it.
They also know the economics. Mm-hmm. So as they get started, it made more sense for them to go through the viral ad tactic, and then it became, once people already had awareness of who they were, it was actually most likely, I'm just guessing, as more television, as more advertisers switch from television to online, television prices come down, and people who are placing ads online can take advantage of that inventory space that's available in traditional, and it's working in their favor.
Mm-hmm. And you also have to think, you know, for a brand, you know, a digital darling like that, they went viral with their first video. They're not going to go viral like that again, right? The inner remarkability of their product is out. Yep. So that part is gone, right? You only get to launch once, right? And don't squander the launch. Do something really cool and remarkable the first time. But now they're not going to be able to replicate the success of that big launch. So if they want to keep growing, they need to find new ways to get mass market exposure aside from going viral every time. It's hard to go viral every time too. So it's natural that for a brand that had a digital consumer audience, for them to move to the territory of traditional brand advertisers, especially because they feel like they can now start to track things like brand lift from offline to online. And what we can do with data now, obviously there's no data that's perfect, right? We know that there's, like, unless you're running like a three-part ad series and that's to one product and it's all you have and there's no sophistication and that's the only channel you're on, maybe then you can get really good ROI calculations. But anytime you add layers of sophistication, you're looking for really smart trends that are very close to what you need, right? So with that being the case, when you start looking at what we can do with data analysis and the kinds of data that you can collect even on TV audiences and how that correlates to digital behaviors, because people do have a connected experience now. They are sitting at the TV with their laptop open like I know you do.
I'm so bad at it.
Right? Birdie's sitting there with her phone out the whole time. I'm going to keep calling her out. I try to put mine down while I'm watching TV.
You are going in territories.
I'm going to get in trouble.
You are getting it. Yeah.
But I'm also keeping her honest. This is how I keep her engaged.
Yeah.
Right.
That's this really is, great.
This is quality time. This is
the attention. That's great. Okay. So did we wrap that part up? That trend?
Basically they're just converging, right? Like these used to be two camps, but now they're starting to see the value of the other camp.
Well, one camp, the traditional television camp, was so scared of digital for so long. It was intimidating. It's so much easier today. They're starting to tiptoe into this new area. Online is starting to tiptoe back over because of the opportunities on television. And before you know it, we've got somewhat of a harmonic convergence taking place. Let's talk about the next trend in this series. Facebook ads are going to become more expensive, including video ads. We're seeing that brands are going to start spending more money on other platforms like YouTube. Hey, that kind of sounds like the call we had earlier today.
It sure does.
Right? Can we spend a few moments on that?
I think we ought to.
It fits right here.
It does. It fits right in this spot.
Okay,
like,
okay.
Neatly in like Lego bricks.
Okay, but for people that are listening, should they know we're going a little bit rogue right now? Like, we wrote these trends out like a week ago, and now we're just bringing something up from today. So we had a call today with a company that really we had a major home run for them 2011. Well, actually, the employees of that company. And we crushed a campaign. It generated 1.4 million followers, some 13 million video views. And some of the months would get 260,000 minutes of videos watched. And most of that was on YouTube. So we'll wrap this up for you pretty quickly. They tasked us, the employees have all gone to another company, and they tasked us to pull together a strategy that would move the needle. We presented it today. And we encountered what I would say would be like
fierce resistance,
right?
Fierce resistance, I think, is appropriate. It to be fair, it's a traditional industry, and we are proposing something where YouTube has some pretty cool superpowers right now. Right. And I know we've talked about that in some other contexts. I know we'll talk about it more in the future, but.
And I just got a text from them.
That's
funny. It said, "We see your passion, Todd!" Exclamation mark. Only one. And then it says, "We like it."
Ooh.
But that also tells me we see your passion and we like your passion, but we're going in a different direction.
And you know what? I think we'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
At this point.
Right.
But, you know, we're so competitive. We want to win. We have a great plan that we know would hit a home run for them. And you get eager to do the cool thing, the cool plan.
Let's do it.
So anyway, long story short, YouTube has some pretty cool superpowers right now in terms of its ability, because of its AI and its algorithm, to put your content, if it's designed for a certain person in a certain point in time, mm-hmm. YouTube knows how to find the person who is in that place right now.
It can rock your niche.
Yeah, it hustles for you.
Yeah.
It is like the ultimate hustler for you.
Yeah.
You just have to be really strategic about who you're creating content for and how you sequence that content both into playlists, but also into their narrative, like the narrative of your customer, the story that they're living in today.
So I think when we're talking about why Facebook ads are becoming more expensive, you know, including video ads, it's because everybody, my mother, is driving into Facebook and trying to buy up some inventory. But on the other side of the spectrum, YouTube becomes a better opportunity because YouTube has a lot more inventory.
Yeah, outside of all of the organic stuff that we were just nerding out on. You know, as we think about the ads ecosystem, this direct response branding convergence is happening perhaps best on Facebook,
right?
Because Facebook has historically been a direct response platform where you could, as I used as an example, if you're just running a Facebook ad campaign and that's all you're doing and you have one product, then you might be able to get ROI attribution. Like that's the point. Facebook is good at that. Very simple little funnels. Sometimes you can make them more sophisticated at scale, but it gets more complicated as you do that. Mm-hmm. But Facebook is very good at giving you a multimedia opportunity to bring people all the way through a funnel and to identify the right person. And then again, just like we were talking about with YouTube's algorithm, Facebook is they're really good at serving the ad to the person likeliest to take the action so that they can both make their advertisers happy and make the people who are consuming the ads as happy as possible so that people will stay on the platform and consume more total ads. Mm-hmm. So Facebook wants to hustle you as well. Again, if you create very strategic content that aligns with people's priorities and you lay it out in the system wisely. Now, so because Facebook is so good at that, it has been the platform that when you hear traffic, direct marketers talking, they all talk about Facebook. When you hear, about advertisers, they're all talking about setting up your Shopify and integrating it with your Facebook ads, right?
Right.
It's all about Facebook, and it's been all about Facebook because you could use video as your top of funnel resource, and then again as like a like a product video or
right.
something like that.
It's
but
beautiful.
Then you can create the rest of your funnel with text-based content and
right.
posts and images and carousels and all these other kinds of cool doodads that other platforms, because they tend to have one or a couple types of content, don't give you that same full funnel flexibility to have just conversations with people like that.
Absolutely.
Right now you have things like Messenger and these longer form in-stream video formats and stuff like that. So they're really, but there's an inventory problem here. Right. And the new inventory, things like these 15-second spots in the middle of a video, are perhaps the least valuable. Right. Because unless your goal is to just get relational brand equity, which has not historically been why people have used Facebook, a 15-second mid-roll ad is not very effective for you because people aren't going to stop watching the video they were just watching to click on your ad unless it's really compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And 15 seconds, frankly, very rarely is going to be that compelling for you to drive a direct response. And if you have a higher cost product that would be worth running that kind of ad on Facebook, then it's certainly going to require more than 15 seconds. So that ad inventory isn't useful unless you're using other ads
right.
upstream in the platform.
Help supplement.
And then you're retargeting downstream.
Right.
So you either have to have a mass market branding campaign here in this inventory, or it has to be retargeting downstream in your funnel. So Facebook is running out of inventory. Even the new stuff they're creating isn't that good. It's for people who are already big. And so what does that mean for the rising cost of Facebook ads? What are advertisers going to do, especially as we start considering things like this prosumer shift that we're going to talk about here in a couple of episodes?
This is a great episode right? coming up.
Yeah. But that means that brands are going to move to places where there's more inventory, people have a lot of time spent on the platform, and where they have the ability to bring them through a full funnel native experience, mm-hmm. right? Like people want to be on the platform and stay on a platform. Brand marketers have not figured out that it's not about traffic to your website anymore. It's about getting your message into their head, mm-hmm. wherever they're at. And all of the platforms are optimized to keep people on their platforms.
It sure took people a long time, though, to get to that.
Yeah, right? It's still happening, right? So here you, so you're going to start seeing a shift from places like Facebook to places like YouTube, because the economics of making a video when the ad inventory is so much cheaper shifts everything.
Right.
There's so much inventory on YouTube. People spend so much time watching video, and you don't get charged until people watch 30 seconds. Okay. So there was a little bit of an exodus for that short window after some of the, you know, not safe stuff was appearing, you know, like for major advertisers. But this was a very small problem, right, and it was a tiny blip on the YouTube's growth trajectory.
Right.
People are flocking to YouTube, and it's because the inventory is so much more affordable, but it does require using video and, again, being very smart about sequencing. Again, you can also think about the magic of using YouTube to capture people at the top of the funnel or to convert people further down the funnel, but then also use maybe some of the other ad formats within the Google universe, such as some of like the email type stuff or display type stuff, in order to help round out your funnel. Google is also pretty good at that, and people overlook Google these days because Facebook had been the shiny new kid on the block.
So the people that get confused when they're hearing you explain this are the ones that still have the mindset of one video as their harpoon.
One video to rule them all that closes deals in 3 minutes or less.
Right, or does it in 30 seconds, because they also are stuck in the paradigm of television.
Right, because brand commercials close.
Right.
They close deals.
Every time, like magic. But there's all, like, we spend a good portion of our day breaking down these misconceptions and making sure that people have the right perspective before they get on the call or off the call, because they'll never be able to make a buying decision if they are stuck in an old paradigm and not understanding that there are videos from multiple parts of the funnel. But you can't do any of that if you don't start with a smart strategy. And listeners of this podcast know that maybe that is our foundational point we keep coming back to. Don't just be a creator. Provide really smart tactical strategies so you can use these videos throughout the funnel and move people sequentially through the videos, so making a buying decision becomes a no-brainer. And that for us is a lot of fun. Did we finish up on the Facebook ads becoming more expensive as a trend and brands are going to start going to YouTube, or do you have more to add?
I think to extend that conversation just a teensy bit further, it's not just YouTube really, right? YouTube and Google, the Google universe of ads, is another good direct response option,
right,
that is lower cost these days, aside from search, of course, compared to Facebook. Facebook, you know, it's going to start becoming more of an option. But beyond that, there is also this omni-channel option, which is to use different ad formats for what they're for, and not to ask every ad format you use to generate ROI,
right,
but to understand their function. Sometimes maybe just getting like a targeted person to watch a video or to click your website is worth it, because you need to have a good retargeting list, right? And you need to build a good retargeting list. So if you have a campaign that does just that function and you optimize like cost per pixel or something like that, that's good. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's understanding that these different platforms are part of a complex system, and that you have control over these different toggles, and that if you set up the right analytics infrastructure, you can have a control over these different levers.
I jump in real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to define for people, when Marcus says omnichannel, for those that don't know, and I think it's important for us as a podcast to also be teaching some of these terms as we go through. Omnichannel is a cross-channel content strategy that organizations use to improve their user experience rather than working in parallel. There are like communication channels that have supporting resources that are designed and orchestrated to cooperate together.
Right. So like you might use YouTube to run ads at a conference. We've talked about this, to pixel a targeted persona, so that you now have a retargeting list in your Google Ads that you can use to run, say, display or YouTube videos pre-rolls and as a retargeting ad to those people, right? So understanding that just like in a direct, like if you were using one platform like Facebook for direct response, you can do that kind of thing. It's just we're not talking about closed loop perfect systems, but you can get really good senses of the indicators, and you also at the end of the day is your finances should be able to be tracked. Like if you're a grown-up business, you should be able to know that you're being profitable. If you're tracking things like sales velocity, you'll know if the changes you're making aren't just causing a local blip, but are causing a actual increase in the way that you're selling and the speed at which you're generating revenue. Because it's possible to, for example, increase the open rate on all of your emails in a 5-part series and get zero extra dollars of revenue at the end. Because maybe some of the people who were likeliest to buy didn't resonate with the types of subject lines you use to maximize the local open rate.
Absolutely.
Happens all the time. We see all sorts of situations where people will run 5 tests, each of which is a winner, implement all of them, and then find that the sum of the parts was less than the whole before. It happens all the time. Because these are complex systems. So get a sense of get your analytics in order, but then be willing to use multiple systems and multiple ad formats for what they're designed for. We see ads, for example, with our clients where they're doing display ads for top of the funnel. They're trying to, because they don't know how else to get someone to click, to build their retargeting list. So they'll pay hundreds of dollars CPMs to get in front of niche audiences. And then they'll have like a 0.5% click-through rate or something crazy. And then they wonder why, you know, all of their marketing is leaking.
This marketing stuff doesn't work.
Right. And it's because, you know, display ads are not good for getting someone excited about the new opportunity you're presenting, because you can communicate 6 words.
Right.
But YouTube is great for that, because if you can capture someone's attention for 5 seconds and earn 15 seconds, and then those 15 seconds, you promise some unique and novel insight that can earn you 30 seconds, then you get charged. And now you have captured someone who is engaged by that initial message. Right. So you can follow up with them through any of the Google properties, through retargeting.
Which is brilliant.
And if that video is 10 minutes long, people could keep watching it. And we've run ads that are as long as 18 minutes. Mm-hmm. And some of those ads have 8.5, 8-minute long audience retention.
We were just looking at the stats today.
Looking at some stats today.
Right. And when I got to that point, Marcus and I were making a compelling argument.
Same client.
I'm still kind of worked up about it.
We're still really competitive.
And we were making a compelling argument for why longer videos are better in this scenario. And we were showing the data about how YouTube is providing greater discoverability and recommendations.
Organic discoverability on YouTube is powerful, but like we all are talking about how it's dead on Facebook, for example.
Right.
And Instagram has a feed now and all of this other stuff, but YouTube is out straight hustling you.
Right. The organic reach on Facebook is somewhere between 1 and 6%.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, why even be there?
What's the point?
Right.
So, I just heard that stat today. We must listen to the same podcast.
I know.
I literally sat in my car for an extra 5 minutes this morning before coming in to finish that podcast.
I listened to it on my run this morning, and I was like, I wonder if Marcus has heard that yet.
I bet half of our listeners know what podcast we're talking about, too.
So, and so it's so funny you say that. But there's something that's going on here, and let's just spend a moment on this, because when these platforms got started, and I'm walking us into the next trend, but when these platforms got started, they were looking for any customer they could possibly get. So the rules were very customer friendly. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing that adoption has happened, and people now have made the transition. By people, I mean advertisers have made the transition from television to online and social, and they brought with them the concept of the television ad game. And so it was smart for social to do that. But now social is changing the game, and they're starting, which we're calling like the end of direct response social. We're starting to see that Facebook and other social networks are shifting away from advertiser-friendly policies of the past and requiring brands to align with the platform's goals. Engaging users, right? And serving more ad impressions in order to be successful. And this makes like prepackaging of content more important than ever. And that brings us to one of our favorite topics, storytelling and teaching to sell. And that now becomes even more important than ever.
Yeah. So basically, as you think about, okay, ad inventory is down. So that means that Facebook has more discretion, and they have always had discretion about how much they charge different advertisers. We don't have control or insight into what other people are being charged on CPM basis, but we do know that the performance of your ad, how engaging your ad is, has a direct effect on how much it costs. If your ad is really engaging to users, it costs less because it extends viewing accessions or doesn't hurt them quite as much as a bad ad. Okay, so with that being the case, and ad inventory now being sort of maxed out, Facebook is able to raise the rates for their bad clients, so to speak, the people who make Facebook a less enjoyable place to be, which have been the people who were going in with the straight pitch, which really never worked that well to begin with. But if you had the right kind of funnel and upsell sequence and stuff like that, you could make it work. Okay, but users don't like that direct sale approach on social, but they love to buy from social when they're ready to buy from social, right? And so there's a key element of getting people ready so that when you show them the ad, it's the next step for them.
To get warmed up.
Right. And so now because Facebook has choice and they punish the bad actors with high CPMs and they reward the people who are providing a uplifting and a community experience, right? They're targeting to have people watch videos together and to enjoy them together and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So things that teach, things that
like provide, a watch group.
Right, exactly. So things that teach, things that provide strong relational equity, storytelling, stuff like that, the whole influencer stuff, like all of that kind of front-end activity, what Frank Kern calls intent-based branding, right? What we call strategic branding. It's all the same stuff. Teaching, helping people, developing relationships on social so that people who demonstrate a high level of engagement, the painting for gold principle, can be then retargeted with the sales content. But because of the way that Facebook is optimizing itself, the CPMs, you need to have those front-end ads that are going out to cold audiences or even to slightly warm audiences. They need to be more brand equity driven. They need to be more about investing in the people so that you can really screen and make a withdrawal from that, karmic bank account, so to speak, down the line. And that's how you can decrease your cost to acquire a customer now, is by forcing people, so to speak, to watch a couple of brand videos and then have them move into more of a sales process. Mm-hmm. And so when we say is this the end of direct response social? I mean, no, not really. Direct response and branding are always going to be better tied together than before. That's kind of the whole point of this episode. But we're hearing a lot of people talk about the end of direct response social. So this is what they're talking about, is this trend line here. Now, what does it mean? It just means you just have to be really smart about following the sequence we've been talking about all along. If you start with what people care about, and then you introduce them to the challenge that you can help them with through over the course of one or two or three pieces of content, then that's what we're talking about here, is to have that formal indoctrination piece, have it be a couple few pieces of content at least, that maybe that's your recurring content strategy, is to do that and to create that type of content on social. And then when people engage with a few videos or something like that, then maybe you push them this one that's more direct mm-hmm. response. And because you're going to pay a lot for anyone who hits that direct response retargeting list because it's not, Facebook friendly anymore, it doesn't matter because it's a small list. And as long as you are willing to pay, you're going to get a really good response because those people were ready to buy.
Right.
So that's how it works. They've been warmed up. So if these people are ready to buy, it doesn't matter if your CPM's high because they're going to buy at high rates.
Right.
It's not like going after cold audiences anymore. So because of the way that the economics changes. So many dating
analogies right there.
Right.
My God. But
it's just that the math changes so radically that taking some time to create that relational stuff first and then filter people through that's the new way to use direct response and social together, which is really what we've been talking about. Your brand team has to have a clean handoff to your direct response team if they're separate teams. And then your direct response team has to have a clean handoff where you have a unified context for your sales prospects so that your sales team can go down and close them and know where they're at.
All right. Stop nerding out. Where do people get started?
All right. Simple breakdown. You define your segments.
Okay.
You create a message for each segment. Mm-hmm. You identify where that message needs to be picked up by your sales team, if at all. and where the brand part ends is always in the same spot.
What do you mean by that?
The brand. So if we think about direct, so branding is the very beginning of the journey,
right?
And then direct response is sort of in the middle.
Okay.
And then sales is downstream,
right?
Closing the deal, right? Especially these days because of the transition we've seen in buying behavior, right? So if that's the continuum,
right,
then the brand part of the message is the part where you start with what people care about today. And you diagnose or introduce the underlying problem. That's branding, right? You have a mission. We have the answer to help you fulfill your mission. That's all your brand promising. That's your branding. That's what it is, right? You have this mission. We know how to help you fulfill it. That's it. Simple. You think about any good branding, that's what they say, right? So then you have the middle part where you're having to now start evaluate solutions. Okay, so this is where Coors got to start, or Bud Light got to start, right? You're comparing beer options, right? So now you're in the category comparing the zeroing in process of the buying series, okay? So here's where direct response tends to reign supreme. You actually often won't see brand advertisers even willing to address their competition, but you'll see a lot of direct response advertisers creating things like, you know, head-to-head, you know, HubSpot versus Marketo type content, right? You see that kind of thing.
But you rarely see it in television commercials like Bud Light going head-to-head. Unless
it was groundbreaking that they did that. It was like radical.
Unless it's the, and you're not old enough for this, but I know you're a student of advertising. I apologize for dating myself. But Coke versus Pepsi, like one of the best examples of showing your competitor's brand and then knocking it down. But you have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And because if you don't, people will make those judgment calls themselves. You have a reason for your positioning. We all talk about positioning as like something that's important. But then when we get to the part of the journey where you actually have to do positioning, people like they hide.
Especially online.
Right, especially online. But again, this is a brand principle, right? Direct response advertisers and marketers, they've understood this. And so this is part of where this convergence is happening. So in an ideal scenario, you just have a marketing team, right? Where you have like a really good marketing strategist and really good writer and a really good creative, and they understand what your sales team does. Maybe some of them used to work in sales, or maybe they have really good relationships or weekly meetings or something where they're really having a good relationship with what sales is actually dealing with. Because the job of marketing is to capture people where they're at and then prepare them for sales, mm-hmm. or to get them all the way to the point of sale. And regardless of how you structure your funnel, the process is always the same. You identify your message, and then if you're going to create brand content, we've already talked about where that content, what that content does, and where it goes. Then you maybe if you are in the middle, YouTube would be very appropriate for comparative content. I know we use that one regularly. Facebook is good for that. You could use a blog post even. Mm-hmm. Lots of things work really well right there. And then as you get further down towards decision and sales type context, well, maybe you start thinking about, okay, well, do we need to create a sales demo or like a pre-frame video, or are there different, follow-up type things that we might need, right? But this is all, we're even talking sales, it's sales or marketing function agnostic. The system is the same. Define your message and your segment, and then lay out a smart system that brings people through that message. And regardless of where your role is, you know what part of that message you're responsible for. So mm-hmm. whichever platform you're using, you should be able to map your content strategy to a cohesive message, just like Bud Light did. Bud Light's message, it's a smaller version because they got to start in the middle, but they did it, right? So they did that all on TV.
They got to start in the middle for a reason.
Because people already want to drink.
Right, and because people already know who they are.
Also true. Also true.
How integrated and aligned are your sales and marketing departments? And within those departments, are your brands and direct response advertisers siloed? We see that all the time. Or are they working together like a relay team to create a streamlined path to purchase for your sales team, which would be optimal, right? Because the future is alignment and creating a clear, bingeable experience that is on demand, and that requires branding that leads to a direct response. So the roles continue to converge as a result of this new normal, and we'll see more and more hybrid campaigns like we've been seeing from Bud Light, Verizon, and others. So The real question is your organization leveraging this trend? Or are you still trying to get everyone telling the same story? In the next episode, you're going to discover the secrets for magnetic content and what it really takes to keep your viewers engaged in 2019 and beyond. Oh, that's coming up next. You're not going to want to miss that episode. Look, if you want to discover how to guarantee that your video content generates ROI, right? A return on investment is really all that matters. Nobody really needs a video. They need to be able to grow a business metric. And if you want to make sure that those videos generate ROI, all you've got to do is go to wirebuzz.com/ROI, because we've created a 5-part web-based mini course where I teach you how to guarantee your videos generate ROI, right? Just that easy. wirebuzz.com/ROI. And we will look forward to bringing you the next episode of the Video Marketing Trend Series, which is all going to be about video engagement. Is coming up right next. Right next? Who says that? Don't worry, editor. You just keep this in. People know I'm doing the best I can. I don't have all my faculties, and I'll lock out right here. Here we go. Coming up in that next episode. I was just talking to Tracy Morgan. All right, I'll redo this part. But did you hear a little Tracy Morgan?
I don't think you need to redo this part. In fact, I think this whole conversation right here, we should just keep this part in there
too. Did the Tracy Morgan thing sound okay?
I mean, my knee-jerk reaction was that I didn't know that it was Tracy Morgan until you said it.
Well, this is a problem.
But if you've given me like 2 seconds to think about it before you outed yourself as choosing Tracy Morgan, yeah, I would have eventually been like, oh, it was Tracy Morgan, because we were just talking about it.
I'm working on it because he's just got a great voice. And
we need to work with Chad more. I was trying to get him to help me with voices, and he seemed very resistant.
I'm dialed in. I am dialed in on voices. I just need a little practice time in the car. In that next episode, which you're not going to want to miss, discover the secrets that we're going to be talking about video engagement. It's coming up next right here on Video Marketing Mastery. Peace. Whoa, Marcus.
Peace.